This is 1320 WILS. You may be thinking like me about getting a dog. Yes, it is. It is something I'm seriously considering. At least my wife is, so I guess I am too. Let's talk to a nationally recognized award-winning animal behaviorist, author of the book Embracing the Wild in Your Dog. Brian Bailey joins us now. Brian, great to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, and we talked a while back, and you've got, what, like four dogs yourself?
I do.
And what, how are the dogs doing, by the way?
They're doing great. In fact, it's actually the lowest number I've ever had. So I'm used to having much more dogs, many more than four.
Yeah. Now, you have a big yard, or do you have to walk all four of them?
Well, I'm fortunate that I have a very large training academy, so I can take several of the dogs with me to work on almost on a daily basis, and they can train and run around and socialize and play with some of the other dogs that are there.
Yeah, a training academy. How many dogs are at the academy, then?
Currently, right now, we have just under 20 that are there being trained in a program in which the people send us their dogs. We train the dogs, then we train the human beings.
Yeah, you train the human beings after the dog. Really? Well, what kind of training do human beings need?
They need all of the training. Yeah. Dogs are the easy part of the equation. The humans are the difficult part of the equation.
Like what? What is it the humans need to be trained on?
Well, the first thing, like in my book, the most prolific problem that I see with dog ownership in America is a misrepresentation. We tend to believe that our dogs are more human-like than what they are, and we give them the same attributes and the same boundaries for behavior as such. They're not. They're domestic wolves, and because of that, their boundaries for behavior and the natural mechanisms that they use are quite unique and quite different to ours.
So what about sleeping with dogs or cuddling with them? Or, you know, is that inappropriate? Or
that is fine. There's no problem with sleeping with your dog. You just have to keep in mind that the Wall Street Journal did a study on that a few years ago and said that the people who get the worst sleep in America are those who sleep with their dogs.
Why is that?
They toss and turn, lick, scratch, chew, and move around the bed, and just keeps you from getting into a deep rate of sleep. Our dogs will sleep in our room, but they don't sleep in my bed because I'm just way too light of a sleeper.
And you've trained them not to ever jump on the bed?
Our dogs will occasionally try to jump on the bed. Two of them are so small they can't reach the top of the bed, so there's just an athletic problem. But the other ones have certainly been trained to not hop up on top of the bed.
Talking to Brian Bailey, author of the book Embracing the Wild in Your Dog. He's a nationally recognized animal behaviorist. So here's the deal, Brian. I'm really considering getting a dog here. And in fact, I think it's going to be a small dog. Now, in terms of breeds, what kind of breeds do you think I should be considering?
Well, regardless of the breed, I always tell people, if you're considering getting a dog, first of all, ask yourself, why am I getting this dog? Try to match a dog to that why, and then try to match a dog to your lifestyle. Try to marry those things up. For example, if you're a long-distance runner, a basset hound is not a good partner to take running with you. But as far as small breeds go, there's so many out there, a lot of mixed breeds. It's really difficult. It just depends upon, you know, once again, your lifestyle, how energetic you are, how much time you want to spend with your dog.
You have a couple of small dogs?
We do.
What breeds are those?
They are Morkies, meaning they are Maltese Yorkie mixes. Okay. And my wife calls them the rats.
Did you get them? Did you have them? I mean, was it a breeder that you got them from, or a shelter?
We got them from a breeder.
A breeder, okay. And why did you choose these Maltese then?
You need to ask that question to my wife.
She chose.
I am the big dog person in the family. Raised in Alaska with sled dogs. I always like a big dog around me. That would be something that the wife wanted, something that could hop up into her lap and cuddle with her. So, you know, happy wife, happy life. There you go.
Do you think some breeds are smarter than others or have completely different personalities than others?
Well, I think they're smart in what you need them to do. For example, typically herding dogs are some of the more intelligent dogs. They've won more of the obedience titles than other classifications of dogs.
Like terriers, you mean?
I'm sorry?
Like terriers?
Well, like border collies. Those are very smart dogs. A lot of your dogs are German shepherds, golden retrievers. They're not in the herding group, but they're also smart. Shetland sheepdogs in the herding group. Just about anything in the working group is... It's just because they've had to work so many years harmoniously with mankind to get a job done. So they tend to be a little bit more controllable, a little bit more willing to be controlled by man's manipulation than some other breeds.
The dog that's catching my eye is the Italian Greyhound, these little Greyhound creatures. What do you think of those?
Well, if you're up in Lansing, Michigan, be prepared to get a coat for your dog during the wintertime. Not a lot of hair on those little dogs. But I have trained a few. In fact, I remember a little pair that I trained a long time ago. Their name was Dante and Gianluca. They were really nice little pups, but very energetic. So once again, make sure you have the time and the ability to get this energy out of your dogs, because they need an energy release.
Okay, so if you, what about other dogs, like these mini bulldogs, for example, or pugs even? How do you compare these kinds of dogs then?
Well, they're really different than the little greyhounds. They're not as energetic, although some pugs can be very energetic. I find that for myself personally, the dogs with the recessed faces, like the pugs and the bulldogs, they're very noisy. They sound like little locomotives moving around your house.
And you mean when they breathe? Is it the breathing?
Sometimes it's cute. Other times it's not so cute.
Oh, so they're actually just breathing in and out. Their nose makes all this noise, you're saying?
It does. It does. It just makes a lot of sound. Like I said, when you're wide awake, that's wonderful. But when you're not so wide awake and you're trying to concentrate on something else, it can be a little bothersome.
So if you get a little dog, if I end up getting one of these little doggies, is it easier to train a small dog? Or?
No, I wouldn't necessarily say they're easier to train. I just think that sometimes we take size and problems multiply with size. Yeah. The one issue I see with most people who have small dogs is housebreaking. They have a much more difficult time trying to housebreak a small dog than they do a large dog. And I equate some of that to simply incentive, meaning it's not as urgent to train a small 5-pound dog to not go potty in the house versus the 85-pound German Shepherd.
Right. So how do you, when you're doing that, how do you make sure you get a small dog not to do that in the house?
Well, I do it. I treat a small dog just like I would a large dog. And the most important thing is remembering that dogs' brains are hardwired to instant feedback. So when our dogs are out of their kennel, we use a kennel as a passive trainer. I mean, they typically clean animals. They don't want to soil their kennel. Uh-huh. When they're out of the kennel, then they're attached to a human being during the house training process, so that we catch them every single time they go potty. Yeah. So they learn consistently that the environment of the home is not a good place to go. The environment outside is.
But what do you do if you're away from home most of the day at work? How do you deal with it then?
Well, then either A, the dog is just going to ride that crate for a long period of time, which they can at that age. At a very young age, there's no problem with that. Wolf cubs spend many, many, many hours underneath the earth to keep them safe from predators. Mm-hmm. But you have to do that, because otherwise, if you let the dog out and it goes potty and you don't catch it, but then you do, then you don't, then you do, then you don't, then soon the dog learns it's not dangerous to go in the house, just dangerous to go in front of my owners.
Okay. They get sneaky about it. Uh-huh. They start sneaking around and doing things and quiet places.
Exactly. They go to that formal dining room you only use twice a year, that guest bedroom that gets used maybe 3 times a year.
Do you need to train a dog right away? Is there a window where it's just too late?
There's never a window where it's too late. I always tell everyone, as long as there's blood and oxygen coursing through that brain, you can modify it. It just gets a little harder with age, because dogs are creatures of habit, just kind of like people are, just deeper. And it's harder to work against those habits. So younger is better. Older still can get it done.
Brian Bailey, author of Embracing the Wild in Your Dog. I should get to the big dogs just for a moment here. What's you said do you prefer big dogs over small dogs? Or
I do.
Do you think they have a whole different personality set? Or
They do. Plus, I just like to wrap my arms around something big and furry. It's just part of my imprinting. I grew up with 20 sled dogs in Alaska, so I just like a big dog.
And what breed is really the hardest to domesticate and to train, would you say?
Probably the ones I own.
Which are what? what are those?
A lot of your huskies, a lot of your sled dogs, just your backwoods, Alaskan mongrels is what a lot of these sled dogs are.
Just wild animals.
They're wild and they're hard-headed, but boy, they can pull a sled for 100 miles, no problem.
Well, one last thing. When you deal with dogs that have been, let's say, previously owned or maybe abused, is there a way to reset their personalities after that, or...?
I do a lot of that, but in many cases, I have to depend upon medication to help me. And we do a program called pharmacotherapy, in which we introduce a lot of antidepressants and a few other medications to help facilitate the long-term effect of behavioral modification. Some of these dogs are so far gone after that that you just need a little help, and I use medication as a teammate to help me.
And it helps. It's really cheap. They're easier to manage, you're saying.
Well, it is. The medication simply raises the threshold to the stimulus that could evoke a fearful response from the dog. So we use it as a short-term helper to, once again, facilitate the long-term behavioral modification.
Brian Bailey, the book, Embracing the Wild in Your Dog. Also find him online at tamingthewild.com. Brian, thank you so much.
I appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
That's it for us. Have a good weekend. Bye-bye.